And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy being heard around the world. Broadcasting from Austin, Texas, our studios. I'm Tex Mars here at the microphone, and my good friend and working companion, Jerry Barrett, is over at the controls. He punches my buttons, I guess you could say. Tells me where to go and how to say it and all that. Well, not how to say it, but sometimes he says that. Speak a little louder, speak a little lower, something like that. But fortunately, Jerry, up to now, all these years you've been with us, you haven't told me what to say. I appreciate that. You know, I really haven't had anybody tell me what to say except God. Now, I've had a lot of advice, suggestions, counsel, and I listen to people. I listen to everybody. They say, you should preach about this. You should tell us more about this. And I like to get ideas from folks, but nobody really tells me what to say or do. In fact, I've had a lot of people want to shut me up, but government agencies included. But anyway, today we're going to talk about some things that probably a lot of people don't want to hear, or maybe they're afraid of or something, but we really need to talk about these things. This is going to be another volume of secrets, volume 183. Can you believe, Jerry, 183? Wow, that's just amazing. 183 volumes. We really do one a month. Every once in a while, we skip a month, and I always miss it because it's my chance to sort of get some of the most important items from my files that have come in fairly recently and say, hey, guys, all my friends out in Radio Land, look at this. Isn't this? I mean, you know, I'm going to do a program very soon about Bible prophecy and its meaning to us. Because believe me, a lot of these things are extremely prophetic. And I don't think I've been emphasizing that enough. This is, our ministry is Power of Prophecy. We used to be Living Truth Ministries many years ago, and I always liked that name. Wanda thinks I should have kept that name for the ministry, Living Truth Ministries. But I've just been so fascinated by prophecy. And the Bible says that Jesus, this is in the book of Revelation, is the spirit of prophecy. I like that. I'd like to sort of grab hold of that, you know, the spirit of prophecy. And it says also in the book of Revelation that whoever reads and keeps this book, I mean, it keeps it to their heart, keeps it, you know, uppermost in their minds and their spirits, will receive a special blessing. I've searched for it in all the 66 books of the Bible, but I haven't found anywhere else where it says, if you read and you study, you keep this book, you will receive a special blessing. Now, a lot of pastors say, oh, I never preach prophecy. I never preach in the book of Revelation. Nobody can really understand that. It's all those symbols. It's all confusing. It's mumbo jumbo. I'm not going to preach on that. You know what? They're fools. They're part of the overall spiritual idiocracy. There's democracies. This is the idiocracy. You know, they had a movie of that title, Idiocracy. And that's what they're part of. They're certainly not part of the kingdom of God, or they would want to preach the whole counsel of God. And not only that, but they're denying their people a special blessing. And they're not getting one themselves. They're just harming their self and their congregation. And I think that's sad. So we're going to keep emphasizing Bible prophecy here. And these secrets certainly have something to say about that. First thing we're going to talk about is the Vatican today. The Vatican has called for a central world bank, even a world government, basically, to be set up. You know, Pope John Paul II basically did this. Now, Benedict, his Vatican, is doing the same thing. Let me read this to you. This is from Reuters news service, but you can find it Associated Press and all over the world and the world's press. Vatican calls for central world bank to be set up. The Vatican called for Monday for the establishment of a global public authority and a central world bank. Wow. A major document from the Vatican's Justice and Peace Department was released, 18-page document, towards, it's entitled, and get this, folks, towards reforming the international financial and monetary systems in the context of a global public authority. By the way, it called for a global taxation. So if you're mad at how much we're being taxed here in America now, wait till the Vatican's plan for global taxation comes up for passage, at the United Nations and at the, G20 meeting and all these things. The Vatican, in its great wisdom, says, quote, "The economic and financial crisis which the world is going through calls everyone, individuals and peoples, to examine in depth the principles and the cultural and moral values at the basis of social coexistence." That's a bunch of gobbledygook for them to say, we're going to make you change your mind on things, okay? It condemned the idolatry of the market. Now, they don't have anything wrong with that, because a lot of people do see money and material things as almost their gods. But it goes on to say that we need new changes. There needs to be the establishment of a supranational authority. In other words, a world authority greater than just nations, with worldwide scope and universal jurisdiction. Yes, the world authority will tell you what to do. And you can forget about your first 10 amendments to the Constitution, freedom of speech, freedom to bear arms, freedom of religion, because this new supranational authority will tell you what to do. It says the authority should start first with the United Nations, but grow and become independent and be endowed with power. Wow. And it must rule over the developed countries as well as the weaker countries. Of course, we're one of the developed countries. It'll have to have power over America. So anyway, it goes on to say that we need to change everything around the current world structures, from the International Monetary Fund to the World Bank, are not strong enough. They don't have enough powers. It says this transformation will be made at the cost of a gradual balanced transfer of a part of each nation's powers to the world authority. That's it. That's what the Vatican calls for. And the devil wants the same thing. I guess he and Benedict are holding hands right now saying, good job. Good job. Hey, I had a newsletter article and I asked in a radio program a few weeks back, and I asked the question, should we as patriotic, traditional Americans secede? I pictured, if you'll remember, dear friends, two Americas, the new America and the old America. And I propose to you, my friends, that I am a citizen of the old America. I really don't care one hangnail for the new America, the new America of evil, where they transgress our Bible, they transgress our Constitution, they hate dead white men like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, and there's the most hideous, horrible perversions and murders and rapings and plunderings going on across America. I mean, mobs, black mobs are going out and pulling white people out of their cars and beating them. In cities around the world, they're having these flash mobs, 50 or 60, that will run into a McDonald's and grab all the food or smash into a 7-Eleven or a Walgreens drugstore and grab everything they can in sight and run out all at once before the police can get there. Just hedonism and just pure socialist anarchic revolutionaries. Folks, that's not the America that I want any part of. I come from a different world. Of course, as Christians, we're all just pilgrims passing through. But even while I'm passing through, I'd like a little bit of peace and love and harmony, justice and all those things, Today, justice has flown out of the window, my friends. There is no justice. You never know what a crazy liberal judge will do. A 40-year-old man might rape and kill a 12-year-old girl and get 6 months probation. I mean, the craziest things happen. Look at Casey Anthony. The young lady, she's nothing but a psychopath killer, killed her own little baby, and she's out. She's innocent. Even the jury wasn't the judge. It was the crazy juries. I mean, O.J. Simpson was freed. That's what you get for having blacks on your jury. As long as they had one black on the jury, it would forever be hung because no blacks would evidently, you know, convict the guy. Well, I'm overstating again. I believe there are quite a few blacks that are still honorable. But certainly, when the decision came out about O.J. Simpson several years back, if you'll remember, most young black people across the United States had parties and celebrated. After all, he had killed just two white people. Who cared about them? Friends, this is a nation, you know, it may seem strange, but I subscribe. This shows you how traditionalist I am. My wife, Wanda, started subscribing to a magazine called Cowboys and Indians. Well, I laughed at her. You know, she says, we're going to get a magazine called Cowboys and Indians. I had to smile. I said, come on, sweetheart. You're not interested in cowboys and Indians. She said, well, yes, I am. I said, okay, all right. So we got the first issue, and I'll tell you, it had some great articles in it about cowboys and Indians. Sort of brought me back to my youth when I, you know, used to see movies about cowboys and Indians and all that. And it's, you know, it's a nice magazine. Anyway, cowboys and Indians. They had a big full-page ad in there. They were having an auction. You know, Roy Rogers, they call him the King of the Cowboys, the actor. He died several years back. He was a Christian. He testified that he was. In any case, then his wife is Dale Evans. You know, she starred with him in those movies back in the days of Gene Autry and Roy Rogers. I'm sort of dating myself here, of course. But, you know, that's where the cowboy, you know, rode the white horse and always won. Now, his name could have been Lash LaRue or Hopalong Cassidy or Gene Autry or Roy Rogers or whatever, but the good guy would always win. And sometimes he'd have a girl, you know, on his arm, and, you know, he might kiss her one time during the movies at most, and that was probably a little peck. But at least we knew there was romance somewhere involved, and I thought that was pretty good as a kid. Now, folks, it's okay to go beyond cowboy movies. I don't mind that. I'm not trying to get you back in that frame of mind. But here was the deal. Evidently, Roy Rogers and his wife, when they were alive, began a Roy Rogers cowboy museum in California. And it had his, you know, even had his horse, Trigger, that was stuffed. After he died, of course, naturally, of natural causes. And the saddles and the costumes they wore in the movies and all of that. And there was a lot of, you know, cowboy and Indian paraphernalia and stuff. Now, I never went to the Roy Rogers and Dell Evans Cowboy Museum, but I assumed it was a wonderful place. And I saw in this ad that there are all these things that they showed that were at the museum. But here comes the kicker. They were having an auction to sell off everything. You see, Roy Rogers died, and then his wife, Dale, died, and they had told their children when the museum will not pay for itself anymore, because it was a privately owned. He didn't ask for any government money. He wasn't one of these people that asked for a handout. And Roy told his kids, after I die and Dale dies, your mom, if there's not enough public support for this museum, we'll just close it down, sell everything at an auction. Now, friends, they have museums for everything in the world the public is funding throughout America. And private millionaires and billionaires are giving money to all. I mean, they must have a museum of bottles and a museum of cats and a museum of poetry and a museum of guns, and I don't know what all museum. There's the Smithsonian and the Aerospace Museum, and there's the Holocaust Museum that the government blew billions of dollars for. Now, I suspect this museum, this Roy Rogers and Dell Evans Cowboy Museum, was not a big, gigantic building, probably didn't have a lot of expense, but there wasn't enough public support to keep it open. Now, maybe you think I'm off and I worry about something like this. It's gone now. They had the auction. It was advertised and it's gone now. I didn't get down to it. Didn't have any, you know, money to buy that stuff anyway. Where would I put it? I guess Jerry could have put it in the ministry. We could have got Trigger right here in the ministry. But the ministry can't afford, you know, to buy a Trigger, even stuffed. Well, in any case, I thought, there's even a sex museum. Do you know in Houston, Texas, there's a Undertaker's Museum with coffins and all kind of stories about people who died and the last things they said. Yeah, there's a museum to the dead in Houston, Texas, for Undertakers and Morticians History Museum. Well, a piece of America is gone, and it just hit me that this is the new America doesn't want to know about good cowboys or good ideas or good thoughts or pure thoughts. You know, I'd like to start a Bible museum, a museum for God's holy word, and have, you know, all these Bibles that go back over the centuries and beautiful Bibles and such and different translations. I mean, you know, foreign, you know, in German or English or whatever. It, of course, stick to the King James Bible. Some people probably wouldn't like it because of that. They want other, you know, other versions, but I'm sorry about that. There's only one for God in Tex Mars. Okay, well, enough of Roy Rogers, you know, who I used to enjoy. In fact, I voted for the guy. That's right. When I was 7 years old, I went down to the local movie house, and every Saturday morning, you know, they'd have these cowboy movies. And the manager got out, and all the kiddies were there, and I was one of them, and there were hundreds of us packing the theater. I think it cost like a dime to get in, you know. It was really expensive to get in the movie. And then a nickel for bar catting, a nickel for, you know, a drink or popcorn. Now it's probably $10 for each. I'm not sure exactly. But the manager got up there and got his microphone and said, okay, now we're going to vote for who is king of the cowboys for Nederland, Texas. Everybody who wants to vote for Gene Autry, raise your hands. And then everybody who wants to vote for Roy Rogers. Those are the two choices. And I voted for Roy Rogers, and he won. It's interesting that both of them went on to have a successful career. Roy Rogers sang songs. He like Gene Autry, was a singing cowboy. Both of them seemed to be very honorable men all the way to their deaths. And I think Gene Autry died a multi-millionaire many times over. Didn't he own the Los Angeles Dodgers baseball team? I think he did. So Roy Rogers would appear on Christian TV quite often. Okay, well, enough of Gene Autry and Roy Rogers, but sort of a loss there. You would have thought somewhere there would be a billionaire that would say, here's a few measly, paltry $1 million. Keep that museum alive. But nobody showed up. You know something, friends? God's people don't seem to have a lot of money, do they? I think there's a reason why. I think money takes you away from worship of God. I think when people have their eyes on money, they lose sight of God. I love that verse in the book of Revelation. It says, talks about those who follow the Lamb, their eyes, wherever he goes, their eyes follow him. Could be talking about you, dear friend. Do you follow Jesus wherever he goes with your eyes? Keep your eyes on him? I think sometime I'll do a radio program about keeping your eyes on Jesus. Pretty good preoccupation, I believe. Well, in any case, I asked the question, should we secede? And a lot of people wrote to me. Ron wrote to me, sent me an email. He said, Tex, you ask our opinion. Should we secede? Is it possible? Is it necessary? And then he was really very, all the letters I got were very, very thoughtful, and I'm still getting letters in, which I appreciate. He says, should we secede? He said, as a Christian and born-again believer in Jesus, yes, we should. Nowhere in the Bible does it state that we are to remain in Egypt or Sodom and Gomorrah. Wow. Though the statement, come out of her, my people, can be used to justify a person's reason for leaving most anything, it does apply in this case. That's pretty interesting, isn't it? He says the U.S. today is nothing more than Sodom and Gomorrah on steroids, coupled with Rome's lust for power. This is not the country I grew up in, nor the one I served 26 years defending. Former military. The America we knew died, he says. Isn't that sad? I'm afraid Ron's correct. Most are cheering about this, but some of us shed a tear. Oh, boy. Then I got one from the people, activism at fathercoughlin.com. It was a nice one. They said, Tex, well, they don't agree with my essay, evidently. All of these are good people. You know, and they've been writing to me often. I love them very much. Dear Tex, you will, with your idea on this, deeply, deeply fulfill every liberal internationalist Jew's dream by further dividing America so it can be completely conquered. Are you ready to submit to their de-Christianizing liberal will? They were probably laughing with glee at your new message on seceding. They listen to Tex Mars and say, we won, we won. Well, he says, the staff there at this group says, the way forward is the way back, back to God, back to traditional America, back to Christianizing America. It is the time we live in. It is our task. You know, I like both these folks, Ron and the people there at activism at fathercoughlin.com, because, you know, in my essay, if you read it very carefully, dear friends, I think I entitled it The Road Less Traveled. I did state that we can stay in this America, this new America, but remain the old America. You don't have to relax your standards just because everybody else is. There are two nations. Now, Ron says we should just leave it behind. Go on. Form our own nation. It'll cost a lot of money. We'll have to find places and all that. But these other good folks say, no, we should stay and fight. The way forward is the way back. You know, the Bible says we are in the world, but not of the world. Jesus prayed and he said, Father, I ask not that you take them out of the world, but that he's asking God to comfort us, to be with us, to give us the power to withstand temptation in this evil present day world. Isn't that amazing? I've heard people say, Lord, just take me right now. I wish you'd just take me right now. Well, sometimes I say that too. Lord, why don't you just come tonight while I'm sleeping? Why don't you come right now? It'd be wonderful if Jesus just suddenly appeared. I'm looking for his appearing. On the other hand, if he decides not to come down, he's the only one God's the only one that knows when he's coming. All these people have tried to predict a date and a time. They're all wrong. They always will be wrong. But we can know it's close. So until he comes, he tells us to occupy. And I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to stay right here in America. I'm going to fight them. I'm going to contest everything that they do that's evil. And I'm going to try to present myself as a light of goodness and purity. And I know I'll make mistakes. I know I have flaws. But I also know that God is faithful and just. And it says in 1 John that he will, if we confess our sins, he will forgive us. He's just. He's merciful. Okay. Should we secede? Should we leave? Should we get an island out in the Pacific or the Atlantic? Maybe go up to Montana and there'll be so many of us moving in there, we'll take over the state. A couple people have done that, I know. A lot of people, good friends, went to Idaho. Others are going up to Montana. But they're finding a lot of oil up there in the Bakken Formation in the Dakotas in Montana. So I don't think they're going to let us have those states. I'm a Texan. I know they're not going to let us have this state. There's too much oil down here. They're going to keep their oil. Okay, let's move along. We've got so many things here for you. Here's a secret. Princess Diana's death. You know, I did a very special report on this, on the conspiracy surrounding the death of Britain's Princess Diana. Well, after all this time, you know, she was killed in Paris, France, in an automobile accident, supposedly. The French authorities have been reinvestigating. They've got some new evidence, and they say they may arrest some British police, members of Scotland Yard. Sort of like arresting the American FBI agents. The conspiracy has been reignited. Ah. Former Scotland Yard Chief Lord Condon and the former Assistant Commissioner of Special Operations, Sir David Vaness from Great Britain, have been ordered to attend an interview in Paris. Wow. Interesting. And it seems that Princess Diana had predicted her assassination by car crash. She said, they're going to murder me, assassinate me, and they're going to do it in a car crash. She wrote a note to that effect. Wow. And Scotland Yard and the police there in London had been hiding this note all this time. Well, the French police found out about it, and they say, we're on the case now. And if it's true that they've been hiding this note, we might just arrest them and put them on trial for withholding evidence. Sort of interesting, isn't it? Well, should I dare? Do I dare, jury, to say I told you so? She was murdered? Of course she was murdered. Those are some evil people. Now, that Prince Charles, I think the day he was born, they had to send in a rancher with a file to saw off his horn so nobody would see him, you know, because I'm sure they were sticking out of his head. Well, NATO has now looted the Libyan gold. Tripoli has fallen. They murdered, and it's claimed that Muammar Gaddafi was tortured as well as murdered. I don't doubt it at all. Some savage folks there. And of course, there are people. The Israeli Mossad and the U.S. CIA ran the whole project. Now you say, why would they want to do something like that? Well, might it have something to do with 144 tons of gold bullion? I calculated that on my calculator. I think I've got it right. It would come to around $72 billion worth of gold. Now, not only that, but there are many more billions of dollars, actual dollars in cash, in the Bank of Libya that are now missing. And Gaddafi also had been given a $70 billion loan in the Libyan bank by our Federal Reserve. Can you believe that? $70 billion. He bought bonds with it to keep the European banks afloat, the nations over there, and they're still fixing to go bankrupt. But one good thing is they don't have to pay back Gaddafi his $70 billion, do they? He's gone. And Greater Israel now has another nation under its subjection. That's my evaluation of what really happened. Now, we'll be back in a little while. Got a few messages for you. Stay with us. This is Tex Mars. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Hello, friends. Tex Mars again. Did you know that Martin Luther warned the world about the Jews and their satanic religion, Judaism? In fact, the last message, the last sermon preached by Martin Luther, the great Protestant reformer, was on this exact subject. You know, a lot of people out there say, well, it's the Catholic Church. the Vatican. They're the beast of prophecy. They're Revelation 17. They're the whore that rides the beast. Well, it seems that Martin Luther certainly exposed the Roman Catholic Church and its doctrines. But at the same time, he did not spare the horrors of Judaism and the Jews. Now, I want you to have my newest book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star, because in it you will read what Martin Luther said. He actually wrote a series of sermons and delivered them, and then it was put into a book entitled On the Jews and Their Lies. He was talking about the Jewish Talmud, their most holy book, and how in their Talmud the Jews say the most terrible things about Jesus and even Jesus' mother, Mary. Now, in my book, I quote Martin Luther over and over, and you'll discover what he had to say in his last sermon. You know, if you were a pastor called by God, and you're getting old, you're not quite as able, and you know you don't have but a small time left, might even be your last sermon, and you rise and go up to the pulpit, what would you preach on? A man who came out of the Catholic Church and exposed it, and for decades they had sought to find him, to capture him, to torture him, to kill him. But he stuck to his guns. Martin Luther said, "Here I stand." He said, "God, so help me. This is all I can do. Here I stand." But if you were that preacher, if you were about to meet your maker, your creator, your God, what would you preach about? My precious wife, Wanda, said, "Tex, you're 67 years old now. You seem to have a few, horsepower left, horses under the hood. But you never know," she said. "Maybe from now on, you should really watch what you write. What are the books that you write, the videos that you do, the radio programs you do? Make everyone important. That's your legacy, not for yourself so you'll leave a name behind, but what do you leave behind for God that can carry on? I can build a memorial, a statue. You can do all kinds of things on earth. But even this earth is going to pass away. What are you going to do that will never fade away? What will you do for God?" She said, you've got all these ideas for books in your head. You've done research on 100 different books. You've got boxes of materials and research and files full of stuff. You can't even keep up with it all. You got it all cataloged and marked and little footnotes by it, and you ran out of your first Bible of footnotes and margins, and you got about 6 more Bibles, and they all have little footnotes and references and little say, "Look at this," and point to, I have my own little concordance system, my own handwriting. But she says, "But what is the most important? If you could," she says, I was telling her, "I wonder what I'm going to ask God, what he wants me to write next, what book." She said, "You should write the book title as if it were your very last book. From now on, every book you do, say to yourself, this could be my last. What do I want to leave behind for God?" Well, okay, that's what I do. What did Martin Luther do? He warned the Christian church about the Jews. That was his final sermon. Can you believe that? Well, I have much of that sermon, and you'll find out what he said in my book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. Of course, there's also the world chess master, Bobby Fischer. He was a Christian. I have a picture of his gravesite in my book. You'll see the Christian cross. He had a lot to say about Jews, too, and it's all in my book. Incredible things you'll discover in this book. You'll find nowhere else a book of history, a book of truth. It's 432 pages. It's that big format encyclopedic style that I've become famous or infamous for. I don't know which one, depending on your perspective. I hope you'll love it, though. It's, It just, it all came out of my heart, my research over many years. Again, the title, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star, $30, $5 shipping and handling, a total of $35. Am I right? Oh, Jerry just gave us $5 off. Thank you, Jerry. $25 for the book, right? $5 for shipping and handling. Okay, $30 total. I was trying to cheat you out of $5. I have to apologize. Okay, it's not $35. It's $30. All right. It's worth $35. Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. Here's how to get it. Go to powerofprophecy.com. And that very day or the next morning, we'll get your email, your order, they call it. You'll pay on PayPal or with your charge card. And we process it by the next morning and ship it out. You can phone us and get it toll free, 1-800-234-9673. Our address is Power of Prophecy, or just write to Tex Morris at 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. Now, if we get a phone call from you or a letter, you're a note, a stick it note with the money and ask for the book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star, enclosed $30. And I promise you, we will do our best to rip open that envelope and the order goes in. You know, a lot of people say, how do you do your mail there, Tex? Well, we have two wonderful folks here in the ministry and they go to our mail table and they open up all the mail for that day. Every letter, even little shreds of notes or something that comes in, comes to me. The orders go over to another desk and they're processed right away. We don't wait. You know, none of this, you know, please wait 6 weeks for your order. We send them out fast as we can. Then it depends on the mail service, you know, or whatever. But we get them out of here because you've ordered it and you want it and you're going to get it and we're going to take care of you and we love you and appreciate your support of this ministry. That's sort of the way I feel about it. So your order goes one place and if your letter, if you've written anything to me at all, it comes over into my box. And then I come in and I read all the mail and I scream and I holler and I pull my hair out when you write me something negative. No, I don't really do that. Jerry, I've never screamed about anything around here, have I? Well, a few times, but many years now. I like people who write negative letters. They teach me things, you know. One guy wrote me a horrible email. Oh, it was terrible. He obviously didn't much care for my teachings and my books and everything. Called me some very, very bad names. And I said, now, how am I going to address this letter? What am I going to say back to this man? There's a lot I could have said. You know, and have you ever heard of undelivered correspondence? I learned something many, many years ago. If you feel like writing something bad to somebody or saying something, wait a while. You know, the Holy Spirit usually works on you. And the Holy Spirit says, text, you don't want to do that. So, you know, if I have anything at all negative to say to somebody, even if I were to write it down, which I don't do it, I used to do that every once in a while. But then I taught myself, wait till tomorrow before you send it. And, you know, the next day it reads totally different. I don't want to say that guy. You know, this guy, he doesn't deserve this. He might be a nice guy. You know, he was just in a bad mood. Pretty soon, I don't want to send a letter anymore. You know, The Holy Spirit has softened my heart, and I throw the undelivered correspondence away. But this particular guy was in a big hurry. Had so much mail and everything. No way I could get to it. So, you know, he had blasted me in about 6 or 7 pages of type. So I just wrote him back, and I said, Dear John. I can't remember what his name was, but let's just call him John. Everybody says Dear John when they don't know somebody's name, right? Dear John, thank you for your inquiry. Regrettably, the boat and motor have already sold. Sincerely, Tex Morris. And guy wrote me back, says, does this mean, you know, you didn't appreciate what I said? And I didn't respond to that. But the boat and motor have already sold. I thought he'd get the message. And he did. You know, I could have said a lot of things. But they weren't mad. I was never angry at the guy. It's just that he wrote me this long letter and I didn't have time to write back. So at least he got a response. Probably thought I was crazy. In fact, I like the ones that call me crazy. You know, I'll always refer them to an old country song. You know, I say, dear friend, thank you for your letter telling me that I'm crazy as a loon. In the immortal words of the great country singer Waylon Jennings, I'm crazy, but it's helped me from going insane. And that things, I've always been crazy, but it's helped me from going insane. And you know, a lot of people, it's one of them over, they come back and say, well, I like that, a little bit of humor. You know, you've always been crazy, but it's helped you from going, you got a good sense of humor, Tex. I think I want to keep getting your newsletter, you know, so. You know, it's amazing if you're just nice to people, because many of them, you know, their comfort zones have been disturbed. They don't want to hear these things. They get angry. They get mad. They get frightened. They write you bad letters. And you know, but they keep listening on radio. They keep going to our website. They buy my books. And at first they said, this can't be true. This guy must be a jerk. He must be crazy. This Tex Mars is some kind of a loon. But you know, after a while they start saying, you know, they start looking at the world around them and they start finding other evidence and everything. And then they start researching it. One guy wrote and said, I got so mad at you. I went to the biggest library in my city and I spent days trying to prove you wrong. I looked up all the references in your book because I didn't even believe those references were true. I think you were misquoting everybody. He's by the time I finished, I was so shocked. I realized everything you said in your book text was true, but actually it's worse than even you said what's going on in the world. And the guy became a lifelong friend. So sometimes that's the way to work. Well, I'll tell you somebody who probably will not become a lifelong friend, and that's Senator John McCain. What a warmonger that dude is. He's saying now we need to go attack Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's regime. And he says, now that military operations in Libya are ending, maybe next we ought to turn our attention on Syria. He was at the World Economic Forum that met, get this, folks, at the Dead Sea in Jordan. Interesting place, huh? It's probably going to make it more dead than it even is by the time it fills with blood from what these bloodsuckers want to do. I mean, we had just had Muammar Gaddafi murdered. After he was captured, got no trial, no justice, just murdered. And there's John McCain says, well, now it's time to go and fight Syria. You know, I don't remember Syria attacking the United States. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe somebody can send me the newspaper heading, a headline. I don't recall that happening. Meanwhile, the sidekick of John McCain, Mr. Gay Boy, Senator Lindsey Graham, from North Carolina, the same day he made the speech, says, we will attack Syria soon. He said, if it made sense to protect the Libyan people, oh yeah, again, that's why we bombed the smithereens out of them with our planes, it makes even more sense to do the job in Syria, Graham said on CBS's Face the Nation. We're getting very close to going into Syria. To protect the Syrian people. That's what they all say. Yeah, we want to protect them. Janet Reno said, we went into Waco and killed everybody. We did it for the kids. Of course, we killed the kids too, but remember back in the Vietnam War era, one of the correspondents, you know, stood outside on a hill overlooking the village and the village was burning and everybody was dead or dying. U.S. troops just attacked this innocent village and the reporter from, I think it was from CNN, stood up there and said, to quote an army major, we had to destroy the village in order to save it. Huh? Well, say, those are the words of a psychopath. I was reading about psychopaths recently, been studying textbooks on psychopaths. There's so many of them today, especially in politics. I was reading, you know, the quotes, the kind of quotes, the kind of things that psychopaths say. One psychopath was questioned in prison, why did you commit that violent offense? He said, sir, I have never in my life committed a violent offense. I did one time kill a man, but I'm not guilty of a violent offense. Oh, my goodness. And, you know, then there was the guy that, one of the prisoners that was a psychopath, certainly, he had murdered a bartender in a bar. Seems that the bartender had done a terrible thing to him, actually asking him to pay. He was leaving and he said, sir, we'd appreciate it if you'd pay for your drinks tonight. He said, so I pulled out my gun and blew him away. And the psychiatrist asking the psychopath, well, how did you feel about that? How did you feel about killing a man like that? He said, well, it wasn't my fault. The guy should have recognized I'd been at that bar for about 2 hours. He should have seen I was in a real nasty mood. It's his fault that I shot him. He should have seen that I was in a nasty mood. Let me tell you something, friend. John McCain is a psychopath. Lindsey Graham is a homosexual psychopath. Who knows? Maybe John McCain's bisexual. I don't know. But they are nuts. And they see nothing wrong with murdering people. Well, polar bears. Somebody wrote to me this week and they said, Tex, you said in a recent show that the polar bear population of the world is expanding, not contracting. And we got in a big argument here. Locally, all my friends are environmentalists. And they really believe these stories about polar bears have been drowning and that there's going to be few polar bears left up in the Arctic. Would you please give the proof of what you said? Well, friends, sure I would. Sure I would. Let's see. This is from Reuters News Service. The article is entitled, Polar Bear Population Much Higher Than in the 20th Century. Is something fishy about extinction fears? Here's what the article says. It says, if you think statistics are a pointer toward the growth or decline of a species, it will be interesting to have a look at the estimates published in a report by the U.S. Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service estimates that the polar bear population is currently at 20,000 to 25,000 bears, up from as low as 5 to 10,000 bears in the 1950s and 60s. You get that, folks? Back in the 60s, maybe at most 10,000 bears. Today, 25,000 bears. The population is 250% more. Whoa. And then it goes on to say a 2002 U.S. Geological Survey of wildlife in the Arctic Refuge Coastal Plain noted that the polar bear populations may now be near historic highs. Now, folks, these environmental wackos and Al Gore, in their films, they have pictures of polar bears that you're swimming and drown. This does happen every year, evidently, you know, when the what you might call the Arctic summer comes and some of the huge icebergs begin to melt just a little bit at the edges, pieces break off, and if bears are on them, they float off, and if they float too far, they can't swim back to the iceberg or the landmass that they were on, and they drown. I've known some people that happened to, you know, also. Got out too far, or the tides, you know, the undertow pulled them out to sea. They couldn't get back. They were too far out. They drowned. It happens. But the polar bears are not dying off. There's no extinction. According to official statistics, there's 2.5 times as many polar bears as there were in the 50s and 60s. So tell these enviro nuts to get lost. We're tired of their baloney. Now, then I got another letter. Again, everybody wants proof here. Okay, we can give them proof. Somebody said, Tex, you said that the world was not going to be inundated as the ice caps melted because they're not melting. Can that be true? Everything we've been taught in college here by in our science classes tell us that the world is, you know, that the oceans are slowly taking over the land masses and that many islands out in the Pacific, for example, are going to be totally covered with water within 50 years or so because the ice is melting. Well, first of all, friends, have you ever had a glass of Coca-Cola or tea or something and it was icy? You know, you put all the ice in and then you poured Coke up to the top. What happened when the ice melted? Did it overflow? If it was on your table or the coffee table, did it overflow? It didn't. It was still approximately the same, even after the ice melted into the water. Well, isn't that interesting? But in any case, listen to this. Fox News, June 17th, 2011, Is climate change raising sea levels, as Al Gore has argued? Or are climate scientists, in other words, enviro nuts, doctoring the data? Well, the University of Colorado Sea Level Research Group decided in May to add, blah, 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 about the thickness of a fingernail every year to its actual measurements of sea level. It has been found out. In other words, the University of Colorado, all those environmental nuts, get this, let me just tell you what's happening here. They decided that there was a problem. Sea levels were not rising. They should be rising. Global warming says the ice caps are melting and the sea levels should rise, but they weren't. So the University of Colorado Sea Level Research Group decided to start adding 0.3 millimeters, about the thickness of a fingernail, every year in its to its actual measurements of sea levels. Well, evidently, some of the little people that work there reported this to other scientific groups. In other words, be sure your sins will be found out. They were doctoring the books. They were cooking the books, adding 0.3 millimeters every year to the measurement. And then they would put out these press releases there from the University of Colorado's environmental group saying, oh, the sea is rising. We're all going to be inundated. It's going to be terrible. All the beaches in the Atlantic and the Pacific. Oh, my goodness. It'll probably all those wonderful little towns along, you know, Highway 101 or whatever it is in California. It'll all be covered with water. Lie. Lie. James Taylor, an attorney of the Heartland Institute, said, quote, gatekeepers of our sea level data are manufacturing a fictitious sea level rise that is not occurring. My, my, my. In fact, Mr. Taylor said the whole notion of the seas rising, the sea levels rising, is tomfoolery. This data is faulty. Well, and then they go on and talk about it. Well, okay. So there's your proof. Chicken Little, take a nap. The world is not ending. The sky is not falling. You know, the Bible says that until Shiloh, that's Jesus Christ, comes again, everything will remain as it is. The seasons will come and go. And finally, people will say, he's not coming. He's not coming, but he will. Okay. Are you ready to give up your Social Security to pay for seven major wars now going in the Middle East, that the United States is involved in? Evidently, a lot of people are. A lot of people are for these wars. They believe George W. Bush did the right thing and Barack Obama is doing the right thing by prosecuting these wars. And they're willing to give up their Social Security, or a lot of it. Folks, it's not just the wars, though. 46 million Americans now get food stamps whether they need them or not. Did you know that there's some millions of students in the United States whose fathers are millionaires, but when they leave home and go to the dormitory, they go down and apply for food stamps and they get it? They don't have a lot of income. They're only given money by their parents to pay the college tuition and so forth. So they qualify for food stamps. Millions of college students whose parents are filthy rich are getting food stamps. And because, and just for that alone, not counting all the other welfare payments. So between the wars and the welfare, they do need more money. I mean, if they're going to go out and give $500 million to a fake solar company named Solyndra, and then months later it goes bankrupt, but somebody's got millions in their back pocket, if they're going to do that from the White House, and the White House did that, they did that, they gave $500 million of your money away. Well, of course, they can't afford to pay you Social Security anymore. Now, there's a group run by Jews called ARP. Has 37 million members. It's a lobby group for older Americans, ARP, the American Association of Retired Persons. A lot of people like ARP because, you know, you join ARP, and I don't know, it's $15 a year or something. You can get discounts at hotels and rental cars, things like that. ARP used to be a good lobbying group and used to try to help older people keep their Social Security and Medicare and such. But now ARP has flipped its position. It's now being run by, I think, Jewish socialists. And I'm not kidding you, folks. And now ARP has totally flipped its position. And now not only do they support Obamacare to give 35 million people free medical care, including at least 20 million illegal aliens. Not only did ARP agree with President Obama to cut $800 billion from your Medicare over the next 10 years, that's right, to give it to all of these deadbeats and these illegal aliens. But now, ARP has said we agree with President Obama and with Congress there need to be Social Security cuts. Wow. Wow. Maybe it's time we need a new organization for the elderly. Don't you think? Well, the world's going to end in 2012. You heard it here. Now, this is not the first place you may have heard it. If you read the Telegraph newspaper over in England, you'll see the headline, George Lucas says world will end in 2012. Now, Lucas has met with actor Seth Rogen, a Jew, and of course, Lucas probably, he must be Jewish, and Steven Spielberg, another movie director. Now, George Lucas, remember him, the producer of Star Wars and other Hollywood hits, says he is absolutely convinced the world will end in 2012. Now, there's something he's talking about, the tectonic plates and earthquakes and, you know, the Mayan prophecies and all this junk. Mr. Rogan says, I first thought that Lucas was joking, and then I realized he was totally serious. And then he said, I started thinking, if you're George Lucas and you actually think the world is going to end in a year, there's no way you haven't probably built a spaceship for yourself to escape. So I asked him, can I have a seat on it? Oh, I love it, don't you? Hey, folks, I'm going to be in Washington, D.C., November the 16th. November the 16th. David Irving, the great historian from Britain, will be there, too. He'll be a speaker, and I'll be the co-speaker, okay? We'll both be speaking. The American Free Press is sponsoring it, and the Barnes Review Journal. The American Free Press, you know, it's the Patriot Group, but it's a wonderful weekly newspaper. I hope you'll come. It's $90 a person. You get a free meal and all that. A great night of fun. You'll meet wonderful people like yourself. Juan and I will be there. We'll sign books if you got them, or if you want to buy one, we'll sell you one. But it's $90 a person, $160 per couple. Now, if you'd like to go, again, November 16th, it's right outside of Washington, D.C., in Alexandria. But Julia, I'm going to give you her phone number. She will tell you all about it. She's with the American Free Press. If you're interested in going, she'll give you a map, tell you the details about it, and register you for it. I think you do need to get also buy a subscription to American Free Press, but you'll enjoy reading it if you don't get it now. Here's Julia's phone number. Call Julia at the American Free Press. Her phone number is area code 202-202-544-5977. Call her Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. 202-544-5977. Julia. Ask for Julia and get all the details and such, and hopefully you'll register and come. Love to meet you there, okay? November the 16th, right outside of Washington, D.C. Well, until next time, friends, it's been great fun revealing these secrets for you today. My prayer is you'll tune in each week during the same time and discover the power of prophecy.